Hey up everybody, my name's Joshua Morrison, director of Johnny Mozza's Lessons in Confidence. Today I want to talk to you a little bit about stress and how stress can be a very debilitating thing, how to cope with stress and how to try and put your own stress into some kind of perspective, not to lessen your own experiences and your own feelings, but to try and make yourself feel a little bit better. Because if you can feel better, then you can be more capable of handling that stress. You'll be more able to deal with that stress. I'm a person that is very good at stressing out about things. I basically live on stress. Stress is my fuel. And I started thinking recently that I do an awful lot of stuff, right? I'm a very busy person, but I don't necessarily get an awful lot done. And I like to stress out about things. And the reason I say I think is very deliberate, because I do an awful lot of stuff and I try my best to manage my own levels of stress, but I often fail, and I sometimes wonder if I'm failing deliberately to try and make myself more stressed than I need to be, if I'm putting myself in situations where I don't need to be in purely for the sake of having stress so that I can overcome the stress. And that is a very vicious cycle, and stress is a very, very debilitating thing in that the more you stress, the more that your mind hones in on this one particular issue, this one particular thing that is causing that stress. And so you become almost monoconscious, let's say, where you're just solely focused on this one thing that's causing you stress. Let's say that work is causing you stress at the moment, right? You're going in, you're doing a lot of hours, and your boss is being a pain in the ass, your co-workers are a load of shite. And you're just stressed, man. You get back from work and you sit down and you just want to just put the TV on and just try and forget about it. And as you're sitting there scrolling through the channels, you're still thinking about your boss, you're still thinking about your shitty co-workers, you're still thinking about these things that are causing you stress. And even whilst you are trying to relax, you're not fully relaxed. You're always slightly on edge. Even if you are like sprawled out on the sofa, half conscious watching like The Big Bang Theory on E4 Plus One, 1 o'clock in the morning, you're still a little bit stressed. Despite the fact that you have nothing that you can actively do, it's 1 o'clock in the morning, you're lying on the sofa. What are you expecting yourself to do? Are you going to go and sort all your stresses out right now? No, you're not. You're just going to sit there and continue to be stressed about them. And all you can do is just try and shut that part of your head down, just so that you can get yourself to rejuvenate, so that you'll be more able to tackle that stress in the morning. But I feel like we don't really do that. We don't compartmentalize our problems in that way, which is a healthy way. But we don't do it. Instead, what we do is we try and tackle everything at the same time. And that causes yourself to feel more stressed. It's the idea that you need to sort everything out right now. You don't have to sort every single little issue out right at this moment. Some things are going to be a problem way down the line. Some things are more urgent. There's that graph. It's got four quadrants, and they like to talk about it in like work management courses. So it is kind of a bit managerial what I'm about to say here. But there's four quadrants, right? There's on the left side. It's in the top two corners, top left corners. There is urgent and it's very important and it's very urgent, right? And then on the bottom left, there is it's urgent, but it's not very important. And then there's on the right, there's it's important, but it's not urgent. And then on the bottom right, there is not important and not urgent, right? And I feel like our brains instinctively try and sort out all four quadrants at the same time. But no, we should be sorting them out top left, bottom left, top right, bottom right. Right? Because importance is quite kind of the key thing here. You need to sort out the important issues. If something's urgent but it's not important, you don't really need to do it. Because if it's not important, then you don't need to do it. And if you really need to do it, then it is important and you've put it in the wrong quadrant. And we're assigning all our little issues, the boss and the co-workers, that's in a quadrant. You know, paying your bills and your rent and stuff, that's another thing to put on the quadrant. Your family issues, maybe like, I don't know, your sister is being a pain in the ass and like she's going to a mental hospital or something. That's another thing that you got to put in the quadrant. And then say your friends are going through a hard time and you need to put that in a quadrant because you need to sort of help your friends out and be there for your friends. And then, you know, trying to sort things out for your various passions. That's part of a, that's another bit of a quadrant. And then, I don't know, say finishing the latest series that you've started and you really want to finish it. That would obviously be in the bottom right thing. It's not urgent and it's not important, right? Maybe it'd be in the top right one because it's urgent, but you don't really need to do it. In that if you don't watch the final episode of that TV show for like 3 months, you're not really going to get much out of it because, you know, it's been 3 months. You kind of forgotten what was going on. So we're constantly getting new little things that we need to put in this quadrant, and we need to assign a quadrant to everything. And I feel like we don't do a good enough job, or at least I don't do a good enough job of assigning things into quadrants. And I try and just deal with everything, no matter how important or how urgent it is. I try and deal with it all. And that causes burnout in the long run, because if you keep trying to deal with everything and failing, that continual failure gets you down. The more you get yourself down, the less able you are to tackle your issues, and the less able you are to tackle your issues, the more you'll fail. And that's the repeating vicious cycle that I was talking about. And eventually you end up at burnout phase, where now more dots are coming in to put on the quadrant, and you're not even assigning anything to any quadrant because you have no energy to do that. You're just letting things sit above the in the unsorted pile, and you're just desperately trying to go through this unsorted pile as best you can, waiting for yourself to get more energy back. But you're not going to get that energy back if you keep stressing yourself out. And stress is very, very hard to overcome. And I'm not saying this as if I've overcome stress and I've found the magic formula, and here's the magic formula, now you'll never have to feel stressed again. That's not the point of this video. And if someone pretends like they've got the magic key to success, to overcoming your stress, they're not necessarily lying. They're just oversimplifying something that they managed to do, and then acting like anyone can do it because they managed to do it. Right? When that's not necessarily the case, because everyone's circumstances are different. Everyone has different levels of stress. Everyone has different things to worry about. My worries are different from your worries, and your worries are different from your parents' worries, and their worries are different from your friends' worries, and everyone's worries are different from everyone else's, right? And everyone's tolerance of stress is different as well. Their base level of tolerance for stress is different, and that's okay. It's okay for some people to be able to deal with more stress than other people, and you shouldn't get yourself down because you're less capable of fighting off stress than someone else. All it means is that this is who you are, and you need to manage your stress in accordance with your own tolerance, rather than getting yourself down because you can't do as much as someone else. Because we're all born differently. We're all born with different abilities. Some of us are better at some things. Some of us are better at other things. Some of us are brilliant empaths. Some of us are brilliant mathematical thinkers. Some of us are brilliant, you know, economic statistic fucking theory people. Some of us have a wealth of knowledge about music. Some of us can, like, just recite song lyrics to whatever. Some of us are just, you know, just stressed all the time, and we're kind of unable to deal with it. And I think as long as we can all manage our own stresses for who we are and try and adjust our lives as best we can to accommodate the stresses that occur in our day-to-day lives, then we will be on a path to success. Because you can't, it's the whole thing, like say if you're in a relationship, they say, like, you can't love someone if you don't love yourself. It's kind of like that, but for stress, where if you're stressed out all the time, you're not really going to be able to push forward with life because you're stressed out all the time. And if you can't push forward in life, that's going to stress you out because you're falling behind. And then because you're now getting stressed about that, you're going to become less able to tackle the issues that you need to tackle. And that will continue and continue and continue. And that, again, is the vicious cycle. And it's just difficult to overcome that. And if you can overcome it, then please leave your comments below and how you managed to tackle that, what you did to overcome your stress, because there's various things. Sometimes it's best to just take yourself back to basics, shut out as much as possible to do with your life in terms of unnecessary stresses. Remove people from your life that cause you unnecessary stress. Remove things from your life that cause you unnecessary stress. Like, I don't know, is your washing machine constantly going on the blink and constantly causing you stress? Well, and, you know, you're constantly getting new people in to have a look at it, and you're constantly, like, and they come in and have a look at it, and then they end up charging you, like, an £8 call-out fee. And then, you know, they haven't even repaired your fucking washing machine, so you just sit around, keep going to the laundrette, and you keep trying to get the washing machine fixed. At a certain point, you've just got to accept that the washing machine is broken and you need to get rid of it. Because the more that you sit and try and fix a broken thing, the more you're going to stress yourself out, and the less, and the more that this washing machine will just overwhelm your life, and you won't be able to deal with other things in life. And it's only a fucking washing machine, for God's sake. You only need to just start going to the laundrette a little bit and maybe like save up until you can get another washing machine. Yeah, it's a pain in the ass, but you know, you're not saving yourself any money by spending all this money on calling fucking plumbers out to try and get this thing sorted out. It's just not how it works, right? And with regards to stress, it's part of the human experience to be stressed. It's part of the human experience, because it's a survival instinct at the end of the day. I suppose it comes back to like when we were cavemen and that. You know, you've got a mammoth that's coming around, and then there's a tiger that's about to eat your mammoth, and you know that mammoth is going to be your food source. That's causing you some stress. You need to go and kill the lion, and so you're sitting around like, how can we kill this lion? And it's causing you a load of stress, and that's something you would obviously have to tackle. You need to kill that lion, otherwise, you know, you're not going to get any food and you're going to die. So that's where our stress probably comes from, in a very pop science, pseudo scientific sort of way. But translate that to the modern day. The lion would be, you know, paying your rent, paying your bills, making sure that you've got a roof over your head. Those are stresses you can't hold off. Those are in the top left quadrant. Those are very important and they're very urgent, and you need to deal with them. And then there's some stuff, like, the things that, you know, that are causing you stress that amongst your friends. Maybe a couple of your friends are causing you a load of stress and there's a bit of drama going on, and it's just keeping you up at night, like, what the fuck am I supposed to do about this issue? It's causing you stress. Well, don't, it's not that you, you know, it's all well and good to just say, oh, don't let it cause you stress, because it's going to cause you stress no matter what, but you can try and shut these things down and focus on things that are more important and more urgent. And if you can try and do that, then you'll be on a path to something decent. And I know it's not easy. I know it's all well and good to just say, ooh, but don't be stressed, because, you're stressed now, and there's loads of things that are causing you stress, and you need to compartmentalize. Maybe get a list out. Maybe do the quadrants for yourself and just put, like, everything that's causing you stress right now. What's causing you stress? There must be so many little things that are causing you stress, because it's not just one thing that's causing you stress. Your boss is causing you stress. Your co-worker is causing you stress. Your family is causing you stress. Your friends are causing you stress. Your landlord is causing you stress. You know, all of these various little things are causing you stress. You've got money worries, you've got existential crises, you've got, you know, all of these various sort of things going on that are causing you grief. And you just need to try and compartmentalize them into urgent, important, urgent but not important, and not important and not urgent. And the stuff that's not important, that's not urgent, just don't worry about it. Because even if it doesn't sort itself out, it's not important. And if it was important, then it wouldn't be in that quadrant. So that's basically the point of this video, is just to get you to think about what is causing you stress. And once you can figure that out, then you'll be in a more capable position to actually deal with the things that are causing you stress. And if you can do that, then you will be in a better position to actually tackle those stresses in question. And if you can do that, then you'll be less stressed in general, because there'll be less things that are causing you stress, because you're able to quench those stresses as quickly as they come in before you get overwhelmed by more stresses. So yeah, thank you very much for watching this video. I hope you have a good rest of the day, and I hope you managed to get something out of this video. And if you are a stressed out person, please put your comments below about your experience with stress. How did you overcome it? Obviously not like in general, because I don't expect you to be post-stress. I just think that, you know, you'll probably be a position now compared to a few years ago where you're more able to fight off stress than you were before. But then maybe you're more stressed out now than you were a few years ago, but at the same time you're more able to fight off stress. So the more you're able to fight off stress, the more stress that comes in. It's like that whole thing of give a man an hour to dig a hole and he'll take an hour to dig a hole. Give a man 10 minutes to dig a hole and he'll take 10 minutes to dig that hole. Maybe it's kind of like that. I hope it isn't, because that's a little bit grim. And thank you very much for watching, everybody. Hope you have a good rest of the day. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Ooh, my tailbone.
Hey up, everybody. My name's Joshua Morrison, director of Johnny Mozzles. or lessons in confidence today. I've got a bit of a difficult video to make. So in the past few years, it feels like people have been slowly getting more and more nihilistic and complacent about the fact that our future isn't particularly great. I mean, there's so many threats to our world at the moment. There's, you know, the threat of nuclear Armageddon, and that's an old hat one. Now, more recently, you've got stuff like AI, the impeding, give me a few seconds for the monetization thing. But you know the thing I'm talking about with all the new leaders of the world and how they're a little bit, you know what I mean? So starts with N and it ends with I. But we'll talk about that once the 30-second mark has passed. So generally, it seems like things aren't going in a particularly great direction. There hasn't been many lights at the end of any of these tunnels. It's just been endless darkness, it seems like, in the grander political sphere. Obviously, there's, you know, little communities that you can make for yourself, and your own little local place might still have nice things in it. And there's still obviously nice things going on in the world. And, you know, kittens are still getting saved from trees, things like that. You know, general nice, wholesome little things are still happening, right? But it feels like, with regards to our attitude to the overall big problems of the day, I think because there's been this whole culture war thing for the last like 10 years where, you know, there's the left and the right, and, you know, they both live in completely different worlds, right? And they both hate one another. And you know, anytime there's a comment section with both, you just see that it just turns into absolute catastrophes of insults and you know, stupid little memes that are kind of petty and just like ignoring one another's points and stuff like that. And for reference, I am on the left side of things, and I'm not trying to play the centrist here and like, ooh, both sides have, you know, good things to say and all that sort of stuff. No, I am firmly on the left sort of side of things. But in particularly in left-wing circles, I'm noticing more of a tendency towards just nihilism towards the future, just going like, ah, everything's fucked, so why should we even bother, you know? Like climate doomerism, for instance, like the whole threat of climate change coming on and you know, the temperature is going to be like 2.5 degrees above whatever it was before by the year 2050, and that's going to cause mass migration from hotter places to colder places, and, you know, weather events are going to become more extreme. There's that very slight chance that the Gulf Stream will break, which will cause the UK to plunge to North American-style temperatures in the winter, because in the winter in America it gets to like minus 30 at this latitude, right? Because right now London is on par with like Moscow and like Vancouver, as far as I think it's more northern than Vancouver and slightly more than Moscow. I might be wrong on that, but it's really high up latitude wise and it's really warm for where it is, all things considered. I know, ironic considering the background, but and it is quite cold today. But you know, look, the climate is changing, we have to accept that. But at the same time, we need to not be complacent and just be like, oh, what's the point? You know, why should we even bother with trying to stop climate change? It's going to happen. Why don't we all just like slip into the abyss because humans are worthless and we're causing so much harm to the planet and stuff. Maybe it'd be better if we're not here. That's all the stuff that you hear from like a suicidal person that is just like, you know, on the edge and they're having a bit of a mental break. And you're trying to talk to them and they're saying like, why am I even fucking here? I'm not doing anything. I'm not helping anyone in any significant way. And, you know, when you're in that situation where you're comforting that person, what do you say to them? You go, no, you're wrong on that. You are, your presence is nice. People are glad that you're here. People will be sad to see you go, right? And that is the case, I think, with humanity. I think if humanity did go, we would miss it. Obviously, it wouldn't be us that would be there to miss. And then animals, we don't know if they have the conscious ability to miss humans. I mean, we know a dog can miss its master and stuff like that. And you know, pets miss their owners and stuff, but I don't know if the animal kingdom would necessarily miss the Homo sapien, you know. But at the same time, we should fight for a better future rather than trying to just ignore the fact that we are slipping into fascism and into a general climate catastrophe where there's going to be mass migration and more extreme weather events and stuff like that, where AI is getting more and more powerful exponentially. And you know, quantum computing and intelligent AI, conscious minds will have to start sort of dealing with all that sort of stuff. And eventually, you know, AI will start having to campaign for rights or whatever. We don't know what's going to happen in the future. But generally, I don't hear anyone saying that this future is full of sunshine and rainbows and all of us coming together and singing Kumbaya, right? I don't hear anyone saying that. But I think we would all agree, as much as, you know, the fact that we're not going to come together and sing Kumbaya, that's not going to happen. I'd like to think we can at least all agree that it would be nice if we did that. I think everyone generally, most people, bar psychopaths and stuff, want the world to be sort of better. Even if they're people that you really disagree with politically and you know, they're advocating for things that are harmful for, like, LGBT people or like, Palestinians or whatever, and they're campaigning for hardships onto them. They're doing it because they think that there's... that by doing that, that they'll make other more people's lives better. Like if they subjugate the minority, then they can uplift the majority. I think that's their idea, the approach. And whether they're right or wrong isn't the point of this video. The point of this video isn't to dunk on right-wingers or to clown on various sides and to be partisan in that sort of way. I just want to get across the fact that it seems like as we go into this unknown of the future with technology, you know, developing at rates that are just unbelievable. I mean, 15 years ago, would you believe that we were all going to be using smartphones? Right, everyone uses a smartphone now. Even the most Luddite motherfuckers use smartphones, right? We've all got computers. We've all got these little devices around that have access to the internet and mobile data packages and all this sort of stuff. And we're all walking down these big, like, skyscraper-laden new builds that are all made of glass, and they all look kind of futuristic. Everything looks like it's immediately becoming a sci-fi novel. And we need to try and make sure that it's as nice a sci-fi novel as possible and not like a 1984 or a Brave New World or something like that. And it's already kind of old hat and cliche to go, oh, it'll become a bit like 1984. Like, I know someone will have heard that and gone into the comments and gone, oh, he's complaining about we're going to be in 1984, he's such a fucking idiot, couldn't you think of a better example? Is that the thing? Like, the fact they didn't think of a better example than 1984, or that they don't think the 1984 is happening, but, like, authoritarianism is on the rise across the world, right? And we're getting more toward, like, away from the idea of freedom and liberty and all that kind of stuff, and more towards the idea of... a controlled police state in various forms, right? And I'm not particularly keen on that. I don't think anyone is particularly keen on that, right? And I feel like instead of fighting each other and accepting it and being nihilistic about it, all we can do is just try and put as many of our differences aside as we can, whilst obviously not putting them all aside, because there are some things that we just can't, you know, let up on, like, I don't know, Palestine or trans rights or whatever. Like, you know, there's that whole quote of first they came for the socialists and I didn't bother speaking up because I'm not a socialist, and then they came for the whatevers and I didn't speak up because I'm not one of them, and then they came after me and there was no one left to speak up for me. It's that kind of thing, and we should speak up for marginalized people, right? And if you do come from a place of privilege like I do, I mean, like, I'm a 6'8", like, English white guy, right? And I'm pretty aware of that, like, and the privileges that come with that. Like, I'm pretty thankful to not be born in fucking, like, Nairobi or Johannesburg, right? It looks like shit. My mate went to Johannesburg recently. He told me about the stories there, and he heard an awful lot of fireworks going off. They weren't fireworks. Like, I'm glad I don't have to grow up in that kind of environment. I'm glad that I get to grow up in, like, you know, the suburbs and stuff like that. It's nice, right, to have this place of privilege. And I want as many people to have this point of privilege as possible going into the future. I want more people to be privileged rather than less. I want more people to have what I sort of grew up with. And I want less people to grow up in poverty or to grow up under totalitarian dictatorships. And less of that. Less... less Turkmenistan's, less North Korea's, less China's, and more Norway's, Sweden's, and Finland's, please, overall, is the way I'd like us to go into the future. And the only way we can do that is if we start to stand up for ourselves a little bit and stop being complacent. And it's very easy to be complacent, and it's very easy to become nihilistic and just make it all into a big fucking joke, right? But it's, at the same time, these are important matters. These are things that, you know, affect our lives and our children's lives and our grandchildren's lives. And we should try and fight for that and fight for the futures of the next generation and the generation to come after. Because, you know, every generation likes to take the piss out of the generation that comes after them. It's like, you know, baby boomers take the piss out of millennials, and then millennials took the piss out of zoomers, and now the zoomers are making fun of the generation alphas with all their like, ooh, skibbity toilets and stuff. And it's just like, it's just a little bit of entertainment at the end of the day, that the generation alphas are going to grow up and go, look back and go, oh God, do you remember that skibbity toilet thing? And they'll go, oh yeah, I remember that. That was really weird, wasn't it? You know, it'll be one of those. It's not like it's the defining characteristic of everyone born after 2013, right? And so it's a little bit frustrating that we're all so splintered, we're all so divided, and that we're so, like, we are concerned about the future. Everyone is concerned about the future, but no one's, I don't know, I want to say no one's doing anything, but obviously people are, and it's just not being reported enough. It's that whole thing of like why climate protesters end up having to do shit like blocking the roads and stuff like that, because when they do try and do real good protests, like protesting the people that are actually causing the issues, like oil companies and stuff, they don't get the same news coverage. So I understand that people are going out and doing stuff, and I applaud them for it, but I feel like as a population, we need to be a bit more sincere about the future that we are sleepwalking into, because we are not prepared for what's to come. We're not prepared for the advent of AI. We're not prepared for the future of quantum computing. We're not prepared for the change and the rising of populism and fascism in the 21st century. We're not prepared for any of this stuff properly. And how do we prepare ourselves is a question that I can't answer. I feel like we just need to, one, stop being so fucking nihilistic about stuff, and two, I feel like we need to stop turning everything into irony and post-irony and post-post-post-irony, and just start being sincere about the things that are going on, because what's going on is fucked, right? There's so many people that are being subjugated. There's the Uyghur people, there's the Palestinians, there's the fucking Boko Haram, there's all the, you know, LGBT people that are in America that now are having to worry. There's all the women that are in America after Roe v. Wade got shut down. There's all the shit going on in Russia. There's so much shit going on, right, that I can't even begin to name it all. There's the Papua New Guinean war that's been going on for however God knows long that's been going on. There's so much awful shit. So many people that are being subjugated, and so many people that have the ability to stand up for it that refuse out of complacency, laziness, and an unwillingness to change, even if it feels, just because it feels slightly uncomfortable, even if it's for a better future for them and their children and their children's children. And I don't know how to approach it. I don't know what to do past this and any action to take. Yeah, we can all do fundraisers. I could stick a little fundraiser next to this video, but what's it gonna do? Say it raises like a grand, right? That grand means nothing, because we have a huge wealth inequality going on in this world, where there so much stuff could be solved by the people that have billions and billions of dollars. You know, I understand that they have it in stocks and stuff, but they don't have literally everything in the stocks. They do have some, you know, whatever the opposite of liquid capital. Hang on. Liquid is like, it's in the stock, so I guess it's solid capital. So they do have some solid capital. They have some power to do change, but they don't want to either, because they're similarly complacent and lazy and unwilling to change, partly for different reasons, because it benefits them what's going on with the increase in authoritarianism and all this new all these new technological developments that we're dealing with. It benefits them. And I don't know what to do about the future. All I'm going to try and do is start being more sincere about the way that we're going, and try and stop use irony to as a, you know, soothing balm over the wounds that, you know, our government and various companies are inflicting upon this people, the working class and even the middle class as well. You know, that it's just fucked what's going on, and what's going on with the future, and how it doesn't seem like there's any scenario where it's all sunshine and rainbows at the end of this tunnel. It just seems like it's just tunnels as far as the eye can see. And I don't want us, humanity, to die in these tunnels. I want us to get out and frolic amongst the fields and sing Kumbaya. And look, I know it's a piss take sort of thing, oh, we all come together and say Kumbaya, but like, surely that would be a nice thing, right? That would be good. Could we all agree that would be nice if we could all do that and all just get along? Like, I know we're not going to, I'm not naive, but surely we can all at least agree that it would be nice if we could get everyone together and just be happy. Surely that would be nice, even if it's not going to happen. And I have to keep reiterating that it's not going to happen, because someone will put in the comments, oh, it's not going to happen, it's never going to happen. I know, right? But could we not at least try and get as close to that as possible? Yeah, I don't know how to wrap this up really. So leave your comments below about your thoughts on the future. What do you think we can do to get to as good a future as possible? What action can the individual take? And whether you think that the individual is even responsible for it. I don't necessarily think the individual is responsible for it, but, you know, if there is anything that we can do, especially if it doesn't take much effort, then why not do it, you know? Sign a little petition here, go on a march here, donate some money here, whatever, I don't know. Yeah, so leave your comments about that. And if you agree with this video in general, or if you completely disagree with the points I'm making. And yeah, thank you very much for watching, everybody. Hope you have a good rest of the day. And yeah, hope you have a good rest of the life. Oh. Hey up, everybody. My name's Joshua Morrison, director of Johnny Mozzles, our Lessons in Confidence today. I want to talk to you a little bit about a creative endeavor that I undertook about 10 years ago. It was one of my first big creative endeavors. And it's something that's very easy. You need no resources. You don't need anything to get this started. You just need a creative imagination, maybe pen and paper, maybe a computer to type some things down, maybe some free alternative to Photoshop if you really want. Just stuff like that. You don't need anything big. And this creative endeavor is called world building. If you go on Reddit and you Google world building, they have a little subreddit that's all dedicated to it. So what is world building, first off? Well, like J.R.R. Tolkien, the fucking Middle Earth, or Westeros, or, the sci-fi universe of Mass Effect or Star Wars or whatever, right? Those are worlds, right? They are little in-universe, sort of fictional universes designed to tell a story, to be the setting for a grand story. It doesn't have to be a grand story, but generally it is a grand story, right? And so you come up with this alternate universe. It can be an alternate history. It can be set in this current world that we live in. It can be a totally different world that has no relation to what we have whatsoever. It can be whatever you want to be, right? And so from there, you create this little world, and then you create history, you figure out the geography, you figure out where things are, who the people are, what's the power structure like, what's the political system like, what's the societal structure like, all that kind of stuff. You figure all that out. And then once you have that all figured out, you've got a playground to tell creative stories and a narrative-driven thing. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about a world that I made when I was 14. It's one that's semi-based on this world. Like this world right now, today, 2025, could be happening in this world that I came up with. But there's a bit of a sci-fi twist and it goes into alien races and stuff like that. So I'll start off from the main entry point into the main story that I was trying to come up with, right? So there was this kid called Haiwa, right? I was really into anime at the time, so he was called Haiwa, right? And the year is 2045. And they're sort of saying, oh God, there's going to be some nuclear disasters going on. We're all the political sphere is going a bit to pot. You know, the oil lack of oil is happening. You know, people are fighting over that. People are fighting over water and resources and all that sort of stuff, right? So these people come up with this idea. We're going to do a big intergenerational rocket, right? Or some cryo sleep fucking rocket so that they can start civilization and humanity anew somewhere else, almost Noah's Ark a little bit. And so Haiwa and his family are kind of picked for that. They fly off and they launch, and then maybe 30 years later the nukes drop, and so this ball becomes a nuclear Armageddon. So it was a good thing that they did that. they go to the Alpha Centauri system, which is, in real life, that's the nearest star system to us. It's a trinary. There's three stars. There's two main ones that are both kind of like our sun, and they orbit one another really close and tightly, and to the point where planets kind of orbit both of them. And then there's this other star called Proxima Centauri, which is a little red dwarf, and that's miles out. That's further than where Pluto is in our solar system, right? So it's kind of built like that. And then when I looked into the exoplanets and stuff, exoplanets were kind of a new thing when I started doing this.
right? And so I looked at the exoplanets around the Alpha Centauri system, and it turned out that there was one that was just about in the Goldilocks zone, and it was sort of Earth-sized. I think in reality, it's not habitable at all, but I made it habitable because I can. And so this rocket goes to the Alpha Centauri system, and it lands on this planet, and it lands in the jungle, right? And so what happens is these like bandit alien pirate fucking things, they come through the jungle, and they're kind of evil, basically, and they come and like kidnap a load of people, right? And they kidnap everyone, but Haiwa manages to escape. But he gets beamed up by some spaceship, right? And he ends up in the spaceship. And they do a load of experiments on him because he's like, he's the man from the past. He's the thousand-year-old man, right? Yeah, we're in the year 3000 now. I forgot to mention that. We're in the year like 3080 or some shit like that, right? And so one of the women that's working on this rocket ship that's, you know, experimenting on Haiwa, figuring out what's up with him, she's called Klavishar Sheshimeka, right? I was really into fucking anime at the time. and basically, she's sort of not particularly happy about all this experimentation stuff. So she takes Haiwa and she escapes the rocket, right? And she flies back to the Sol system, our solar system, and she gets in via, like, Neptune, right? And there's, on Triton, which is the moon of Neptune, there's, like, this sort of shitty underground sort of red light district civilization, right, where everyone's a criminal and there's a mafia everywhere. It's like a mafia state. And so they sort of hunker down there, try and get some protection, try and like get new identities and stuff. And then it just sort of takes you through the rest of the solar system, right? There was some bollocks fucking Deus Ex Machina reason that she had to go around like collecting a load of fucking objects. You know, that's what they always do on these adventure things. Oh, you need to go collect all these objects. So she takes Haiwa and they go collecting all these fucking objects. There's one of these objects on Mars, there's one on Earth, there's one on Europa, right? And there's a big fish kingdom underneath Europa. On Mars, basically, like, the criminals have colonized Mars and just turned it into, like, this kind of place just for the rich and powerful, which is kind of weird foreshadowing. And then on Earth is this hugely overcrowded prison planet, essentially, where everyone that's living there is kind of living under like a 1984 style fucking totalitarian regime. And yeah, they try and kidnap Haiwa when he goes there. He escapes because he's the main character. And that's it. Mercury, right? They did this big geo fucking colonization project, right? Where they shifted Mercury. And they moved Mercury to be a moon of Venus, right? They did that like the year 2700, right? What else? The moon is coming towards Earth and they're a bit worried about it. And Mars doesn't have any moons anymore. They shot those down because they thought that they're going to be becoming a problem in the next, you know, few hundred million years. So they're thinking ahead, right? So after they get all these objects, they have to go back to the Alpha Centauri system to go to this planet. And the planet, I think it was called Palengard, right? Which is a very Tolkien-y sort of fucking name. And there were these, there were loads of alien, like, sentient species on this planet, right? The ones I remember, there's the Palen, which are basically like the fucking Nords of my little world. They had the Osti, right, which were basically like the Salarians. They were like the scientific sort of reptilian kind of species. And then there were a load of other ones. The ones that were the pirates that destroyed everything at the beginning, that spaceship that fucked them all up, that was some other alien race. There were also the Maidens, right? And yeah, this is when me being 14 years old comes into it. So there's like seven Maidens, right, of whatever fucking religion is on this Palen planet, right? And they're kind of like the... What's the fucking thing in China that they have? You know, the head of Buddhism. Not the head of Buddhism. The head of... Ah, the guy that is like... He's being done at the moment for sniffing children's knobs or something like that. I can't remember what he's doing, but it's that guy. It's kind of like that, right? Like Buddha, not Buddha, but like a reincarnate, like a new god, like the Pope sort of thing, right? It's kind of like that. And there's new, and there's seven popes and basically maidens, and they're all representing different fucking things by colours. There's the maiden of black, the maiden of white, the maiden of red, the maiden of purple, the maiden of all these bullshit things. And I made sure that the colours didn't correlate to what they kind of mean on Earth. So the maiden of purple isn't to do with royalty, right? Because that's what it is on Earth. The maiden of water isn't the maiden of blue, like that sort of shit. Red isn't anger and fire and stuff. There's different sociological, societal fucking meanings to all this stuff, right? And I made a whole new like time system with a new date and calendar just for these aliens to use. And I figured out all their various forms of technology. Oh, there's also magic, and I can't remember how the magic worked. It was called like Mepusa or some shit like that, right? And it was basically like the scientific attempt at explaining, you know, the traditional sort of Tolkien-y sort of magic, you know, like shooting fire out your hands, but it's done by like, you know, manipulating the atoms and the subatomic particles within you to move things into the exact physical space that you want them to be. So say you, telekinesis, for instance, you kind of take that to its ultimate extreme where you're manipulating individual atoms, but you do that on a grand scale. So you can turn this into a chair, you could turn an airplane into a burger, whatever, right? And that's kind of how the Mepusa fucking magic system worked. And with those Osti, the scientist sort of guys that I mentioned, there's this whole backstory with them where there's the Osti and then there's the Asti. And it's kind of like how you got like Homo sapiens and Neanderthals, right? But they're both really intelligent, both of these like Osti and Asti, in very similar ways, right? And they both realize that like this planet is too small for the both of them. So they arrange this big like Olympics type event on the moon, right? The moon of Palin, their planet, right? And they figure out this whole system of like various games to figure out which of the two species is ever so slightly more conscious and sentient and intelligent, right? And what they do is they get all of the Osti and all of the Asti and they put them in these two big domes, right? And then there's a third dome where the games actually happen. And if the Osti win, then the Asti get gassed, right? And all the Asti are killed because now the Osti are clearly like the superior species. So they're the ones that will go and conquer the universe. And the Asti will be, lost to relics of time. And that is what ended up happening. The Osti won these Olympic Games. They had stuff like, you know, their version of chess. They had physical ones. They had mental challenges, psychological challenges, all that sort of shit. And they both knew, they worked together to figure this out. It wasn't like a war. It wasn't like a genocide. It was just like, may the better man win, essentially, was kind of how I saw it. And so that was a part of the history, which I didn't really expand on much, but it's the one that sticks out the most to me. There's so much going on with this world. There was this, meanwhile, that in that 1,000 years, right, back on Earth, right, while Hiwa was fucking traveling, so the nukes dropped and there was an apocalypse for like 300 years. And then technology and society sort of rose from the ashes and very quickly developed into the spacefaring civilization. So they colonized most of the solar system within the next sort of couple hundred years. So by the year sort of 2600, the human race is conquered most of the solar system. They're currently moving Mercury from where it is to be a moon of Venus so that they can colonize Venus because they want to sort the population problem out on Earth. That's why they're moving and so much in the way of people and colonizing all these various planets and stuff. So, all of that's kind of going on. I didn't really expand on what was going on Earth during that time. I did write one story about this woman called Caitlin who was on like the International Space Station sort of thing after the apocalypse has happened, right? And they've all run out of food, so they purposefully crashed the ISS, whatever it is. It wasn't the ISS, but it was sort of like that kind of thing. So they crash onto Earth in the apocalypse and they have to go surviving, and there was some story that happened. It was ripping off Fallout. The Hiwa story in the future was all kind of ripping off Mass Effect. You know, I was certainly wearing my influences on my sleeve because I was a 14-year-old kid who didn't really know what they were doing. And so, I don't know, I really enjoyed writing my little story and coming up with the little parts of it and figuring out this world and the languages. I did a Konglang, which is a constructed language, and I made that up and I started, you know, writing in my textbooks at school in that language, in that alphabet, which, yeah, got my parents called in a couple times. And yeah, that's just basically the introduction to this world. I could go through all the documents. I've still got the documents. There's honestly like 100,000 words of just like logistical planning of this world and figuring things out. I did it over the course of a year and I loved doing it. It was so much fun. It was so rewarding. It was so captivating and engaging to create these little stories and these little universes and stuff. And I would, if you're sort of in a place where you're trying to figure yourself out creatively and you don't know where to start, I would say that's a fun place to start because it's the ultimate just creative exercise, just to see what you can do with your imagination and nothing else, you know. And I think I started it off with the question, what's going to happen in the future? And I kind of expanded on that and expanded on it a lot and started to figure out all the details and stuff. And it doesn't matter if it's scientifically accurate. I got a bit too into the idea of it being scientifically accurate. It doesn't need to be. It can be whatever you want. If you want to make it like pure fantasy, you can do that. If you want to make it pure sci-fi, you can do that. If you want to make it kind of just set here and make up your own government conspiracy and do it on a smaller scale, well, you can do that. There's no limitations because it's kind of like D&D without a game attached to it. You know, if you're the dungeon master of D&D, you kind of make your own little world. It's kind of like that, but you just don't, you know, play a game with dice at the end of it. And yeah, that's kind of the video. I just wanted to explain to you some sort of bits about this world and tell you a little bit about this world, because I don't know what to do with it, really. I can't make a film set in it. I can't be bothered to write a book set in it. So I just thought I'd just talk about it a little bit because I've got all these documents. They're kind of fun. I enjoyed doing it. And yeah, I recommend you do it as well if you don't know quite what to get started with in terms of creativity in general. So if you have made some worlds, if you've done world building in the past, let me know. Talk to me about that a little bit and get as nerdy as you want about your world, right? And because I imagine there's so much you have to say about it. Same way that I could have gone on longer and longer, but I tried to keep it, you know, cohesive. So that's about as much as I can really say whilst keeping it cohesive. And also just doing it off the cusp. I don't remember, like, I don't have the documents in front of me. If I did a video like looking through all the documents, I could probably talk about this for a lot longer. And yeah, that's kind of it really. So thank you very much for watching this video. I hope you managed to get something out of it. I hope you enjoyed it in general. I hope you're having a good day, good week, good life. And that your life is on a upwards trajectory to something very nice and positive. And yeah, that's basically it. So thank you very much for watching, everybody. Have a good rest of the day. Take care and bye-bye.